on the past. Please listen carefully.
Go, go.
Welcome to the Coco Crew Podcast. A delicious adventure into the world of retro computing news and information. Featuring the Tandy Color Computer.
Hey, you got your Coco 3 yet?
Coco.
Welcome, Coco Cruisers. You are listening to episode 86 of the Coco Crew Podcast. I am John Linville. I am joined by my other regular co-hosts. We've got Neil Blanchard. Hello, Neil.
Hello, John.
Hello, Mike. How are you doing, Mike? Mr. Mike Rowan?
I'm doing good. Hello, Coco Maniacs.
Very good. And, of course, the distinguished Mr. Boise Pete. How are you, Mr. Boise?
I'm doing well. Good evening to the Coco world.
Awesome. Awesome. All right. Things are moving along. The year is slipping away. We're already past the halfway mark. The Tandy Assembly is roughly 2 months away. Very exciting about that. I think currently CocoFest is scheduled for about 9 months away. So if you want to make a baby and have a race there, that'd be an interesting CocoFest project.
Expensive one.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. That. You know, so time is marching on. That's how we usually measure time in the community and how many Tandy Assemblies and how many CocoFests that we had. And so things are moving along pretty well. I'm definitely looking forward to some time off and hitting Springfield, Ohio. I think my wife's going to come with me this year. We're cool. Sending our youngest off to college, and so she'll be sitting around here with nothing to do. So what's everybody been doing? What you been working on? Anything cool? Neil, what you got going on?
No, I haven't really been working on too much right now during the summer months here. Just still doing the usual, working on a few Gamesters. That's about it.
Yeah? Yeah. Well, that's cool. Good to keep the pipeline filled.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Are you still having a good set of orders coming in, Neil?
Yeah, it's steady. I mean, we haven't really been advertising because, summer's a little, more busy with other things to do. But
yeah, I would think that summer would not be a time for explosive Coco product sales, just in general. So.
Right.
Yeah, and I can see how it could be for some people. But, yeah, I would think a lot of us still like to go outside on Saturday afternoons and do some new books.
Yeah.
So, where even if we don't like it, still have to do it. It'll make hay while the sun shines.
That lawn isn't growing itself.
A vacation too, right? We were on vacation last week, so this is the time of year where people are out and about. So, hobbies inside, which is the Coco's an inside hobby, usually for active people, is put on the back burner for this time of year.
Well, it's one of my best hobby projects I've done in staycation mode while at a beach rental somewhere. But that's just me. I'm kind of a nerd.
There is
good
that.
Good concentration.
So, let's see. I haven't been up to a whole lot lately, although I was working on a bit on, posted a blog post and posted to the link to the Coco Crew Facebook page, looking to, well, we mentioned it a couple of months back that David Weens was trying to recover the VTL09, which is a minimal programming language from the past that was originally developed for the Motorola 6800 and then has been ported to the 6502, and somebody had ported it to the 6809, and there's actually a assembly source code listing of VTL09 in was it the 6809 cookbook, but it's only in some printings of it. They have a chapter that describes the code, but then the appendix that actually includes the source is only in some of the printings. But he happens to have a book that's got the printing, and he typed it in, uses some different assembly language conventions, so he's had some trouble getting it assembling on the assemblers available to him. And so I he was asking for some help, and I kind of got involved a little bit. I'm not sure how much I helped. I did manage to get it assembling, but so far I don't have it really running. Not in a useful way, but maybe with a little more work and time, maybe we'll get that going. It's kind of a cool programming language. It's almost at the level of BASIC, but got some different concepts. I hope to eventually get that running. It'll be a cool thing to work on.
That is cool.
It's sort of a vaporware at this point. one step above vaporware, I guess, but still not really there. So what about acquisitions? Anybody got anything cool lately? I had been kind of stalled on my eBay stuff. I think my eBay delivery man thought I was mad at him. But I've been picking up a few things lately, but not strictly speaking cocoa, most of it, I think. But well, I did buy a 50 count of the SN76489 chips, just in case, to have something to play with. Got a Christmas present for my mom, but I guess that's a secret. Well, I did get a book from Australia, Making the Most of Your TS-80 Color Computer by Peter Vernon. Looks kind of cool. I mean, it's not groundbreaking or anything, but, you know, sort of a period piece. Also picked up, at the last Handy Assembly, there was a seminar on programming, getting started programming, of course, the Z80 TRS-80s. But there's a book recommendation, TRS-80 Assembly Language Made Simple by Earls McCall. And anyway, at that time, I could not find it on eBay or any other used book sources. So I kind of put in a search and waited, and finally that one turned up. So I got that. Not cocoa related, but it interests me. I guess that'll have to make for a good enough introduction. So now that we've gotten warmed up, why don't we take a little break, and we'll be back with some announcements.
Remember when we used to play computer games with cheap plastic joysticks? Our fingers would ache for days.
Put the past behind you. Introducing the Gamester. The Gamester is the ultimate two-button joystick controller for your color computer, Dragon, and Tandy 1000. The Gamester features a genuine arcade-quality joystick with two large arcade-quality cherry switch buttons on a single surface. Best of all, the hardware is mounted in a sturdy wooden cabinet. It sits comfortably on your lap or on your desk. Experience the difference that super high-quality, heavy-duty components make in your gameplay. No more finger fatigue. Responsive button switches. Sturdy components that can take the punishment of even the most enthusiastic player. Every Gamester is built to order. Choose the wood for your cabinet. Choose custom paint or stain and finishes. Select the cable length for your Gamester. Choose a left-handed configuration, or add adapters for your Dragon computer. The Gamester is designed to last a lifetime. To build yours, simply reach out to Neil Blanchard by email, neil@cococrew.org. That's neil@cococrew.org. Experience genuine arcade controller action for all of your favorite color computer, Dragon, and Tandy 1000 computer games. For true arcade action, it's The Gamester.
All right, Coco Cruisers, welcome back. Now it is time for some announcements. You are listening to The Coco Crew Podcast. Woohoo! We are available on Twitter with a Twitter handle of @CocoCrewPodcast. That's @COCOCREWPODCAST. If you are prone to sending tweets or reading tweets, feel free to tweet at us, and we'll probably tweet back. Well, you never know, but it's possible. We're, of course, available on Facebook. We have a Facebook group called The Coco Crew Podcast, all four words separate. So come and check us out. You maybe get some early news on upcoming editions of the podcast, or just a general exchange of news and ideas with other like-minded Coco people. You're certainly welcome to join us and be part of the party. Let's see. We are, of course, a podcast. So we're available. Of course, we have an RSS feed available at cococrew.org for the real DIY podcast people. Also available with listings through Apple Podcasts and through Google Play. But, of course, if you prefer to, rather than downloading podcasts, if you prefer to stream them, we are available through Spotify, through Stitcher, and the service known as TuneIn. So however you want to reach us. If for some reason you're trying to find the podcast and can't easily find it, let us know where you're looking, and we'll see if we can get listed there. We have been for some time making was doing a transformation on our audio podcast into a video form. We make available on YouTube. If you prefer to digest a podcast through YouTube, then we are available there. One benefit to using YouTube is YouTube has a pretty decent subtitling service. So if you are perhaps hearing impaired, or if perhaps English is not your first language, then you may want to try checking out the podcast through YouTube. We are a member of the Throwback Network. This is a list of retro-themed podcasts with a variety of topics, many of them 80s technology-oriented, but others 80s culture and other stuff that, you know, old people like us might enjoy. So if you are caught up with the Coco Crew podcast and looking for something else to listen to, then we recommend that you check out the Throwback Network. We are also listed on the Game by Game Podcast Information Hub. This is also a list of retro-themed podcasts, in this case all technology and gaming, you know, home computer-oriented. And again, if you are caught up with the Coco Crew podcast, we recommend that you take a look at the Game by Game Podcast Information Hub. Audio for the Coco Crew podcast is hosted by CyberEars. If you have a need to host audio on the internet, whether it be for your own podcast or perhaps for your social club or your place of worship, then we recommend that you check out CyberEars, where you will get your audio on your terms. If you want to reach out to the host of the Coco Crew podcast via email, we have some addresses set up. First three will reach all of the hosts, and these are, of course, our show, SHOW, at CocoCrew.org. That's @COCOCREW.org. We also have podcast, podcast, at CocoCrew.org. And, of course, feedback, feedback, at CocoCrew.org. And if for some reason you'd like to send email but only want to reach one of the hosts, then I'm available as John, J-O-H-N, at CocoCrew.org. Neil is Neil, N-E-I-L, at CocoCrew.org. Mike is Mike, M-I-K-E, at CocoCrew.org. And Boise is B-O-I-S-Y, at CocoCrew.org. So if you feel the need to reach out and touch someone via email, then feel free to make use of any of those email addresses. See, at this point, we have an announcement of some events in real life that we feel might be of interest to our listeners. So let's see, the first on the list for right now, let's see, we've got VCF West coming up August 6th through the 7th of 2022. This is, of course, Vintage Computing Festival West, held in Mountain View, California at the Computer History Museum. On exhibits, you'll find demonstrations of 1960s mini computers, 1970s homebrew systems, 1980s 8-bitters, and a few oddities. Some exhibits contain pristine original machines, while others focus on unique modern hacks and everything in between. So, if you are on the west coast of the United States, particularly in the Silicon Valley region, then we recommend that you get to Vintage Computer Festival West, August 6th to 7th, 2022. September 10th through 11th, 2022, have the Vintage Computer Festival Midwest, which will be held in Elmhurst, Illinois, Waterford Banquets. Vintage Computer Festival is a gathering of collectors, hobbyists, and curious observers who enjoy tinkering with the computers of decades past. No one can agree upon what constitutes vintage, but a general rule is anything made before 1990. But of course, there are exceptions for obscurity and novelty. You may find early home computers like the Commodore, Apple, and Atari, as well as once inaccessible business and scientific systems that cost tens of thousands of dollars in their day. At VCF Midwest, we welcome a variety of exhibits with emphasis on the creative and obscure. So, there you go. If you find yourself available September 10th through 11th of 2022 in the Chicagoland area, then we recommend that you check out Vintage Computer Festival Midwest 17. All right. Of course, the big event coming up September 30th through October 2nd, 2022. We're talking about Tandy Assembly, held in Springfield, Ohio. This is our big Tandy event. So we welcome Tandys of all types. We'll have, of course, all the various original business-oriented machines, the Z80 machines, original Model 1. We'll have the portables, Model 100s, and the like. There'll almost certainly be some Tandy 1000s. Hopefully there'll be a few Cocos there. There'll be pocket computers, all kinds of cool stuff, an MC-10, maybe a few other things kind of tangentially related to Tandy. If nothing else, we'll have some Tandy memorabilia. We'll maybe get Randy to drag out his Radio Shack sign. It'll be a cool event held in Springfield, Ohio, September 30th through October 2nd. Be sure to check out our Tech Track, which is our special Friday event, which consists of a set of highly technical and informative classes taught by some of the leading figures in the vintage Tandy Radio Shack TRS-80 community. Very exciting stuff. I know everyone here is excited about Tandy Assembly. What else is there to say? Be there or be square. Moving on, October 14th through the 16th, 2022, over the Portland Retro Gaming Expo. This, of course, is Portland, Oregon. What is the Portland Retro Gaming Expo? Retro Gaming Expo, Inc. is a Portland, Oregon-based 501c4 nonprofit cooperative organization dedicated to creating awareness of and appreciation for classic video and arcade games through the presentation of events and conventions that celebrate the historic contribution video games have made and continue to make in popular culture. I've never been to PRGE, always heard good things. If you are in the Pacific Northwest, then I highly recommend that you go and check out PRGE. And then send us some feedback. Let us know how it went. Let's see. Oh, let's see. We've got one more event here at October, the third week of October, October 22nd, I guess the time of the fourth week. Dragon Meetup 2022. Oh, October 22nd and 23rd. I have to adjust that. At Blanco's Hotel, Port Talbot. A great opportunity for us to get together and see each other's wares and discuss all things Dragon. And yes, there will be a pilgrimage to the Dragon Data Kenfig Factory on Saturday for photo opportunities between Swansea and Cardiff, a little closer to Swansea. So, if that geography is compatible with travel for you, then we recommend that you check out Dragon Meetup, October 22nd, 2022. Still have only a tentative date here, but April 22nd and 23rd of 2023. For CocoFest 2023. So, pencil it in. It may change. Not really up to us. Well, that's all we've got for events in real life. So, why don't we take a little break, and we will be back with some news.
Since 1994, Cloud9 has been making cool stuff for your color computer. Like the Cloud9 Mini Flash, a flash cartridge for your color computer or Dragon. The Mini Flash gives you a total of 4 16K banks of flash memory. You can easily flash ROM images into any of the 4 16K banks. Store your favorite DOS ROMs and game packs on the Mini Flash. And the Mini Flash is perfect for prototyping your own ROMs without the need for an EEPROM burner. The Mini Flash comes with flash programming software and test utilities. It's preloaded with HDB DOS for DriveWire and two games from Retro Tinker, Coco Dooku and Follow Coco, so you can use the Mini Flash immediately. The Cloud9 Mini Flash works on all color computer and Dragon models and is housed in a high-quality injection molded cartridge case. The Mini Flash, only from Cloud9. Cool stuff for your color computer. Visit cloud9tech.com for details.
All right, Coco Cruisers and Coco Maniacs, now it's time for some news.
The first news item is CocoFS, a tool for interacting with TRS-80 color computer disk images by Jason Thorpe. This is a GitHub page for, it looks like, a source code project called CocoFS that Jason is working on for reading, it may be writing, but certainly reading disk extended color basic disk images.
It does look like you can format and copy in, copy out.
Yeah, you can remove. So, yeah, you can write, apparently.
Yeah,
get directories. Delete files, dump.
Yeah, that's good.
Format, yep.
Looks like it's pretty straightforward and easy to use.
Useful.
Yeah. Well, yeah, like you say, seems to be a never-ending need for for these tools. The tools that exist, there's always people always feel like they can do it, they'd like it done a little differently or whatever, so... You know, let many flowers bloom, I guess, is a...
Yeah, Tool Shed does it all, but hey, knock yourself out. The next news item is, according to Appendix K in the TRS-80 Color Basic book by Bob Albrecht, this is from Fabian Rodriguez. Fabian posted an image of a page, Appendix K page, out of a book from Bob Albrecht that actually listed, interestingly enough, the names of the authors of the Getting Started with Color Basic Manual, Going Ahead with Extended Color Basic Manual, and some other books related to the color computer. This is a very interesting historical information.
Yeah, this has always been sort of a little bit elusive. The books themselves don't credit their authors. I think I was able to track down Jonathan Erickson for Going Ahead with Extended Color Basic through like Amazon or something at one point. Not him, but I was able to track down his name as associated with the book. Of course, there's the one that came with the Lucy Coco 3 that was like going ahead or getting started with Extended Color Basic. It's like a mixture of the two books. I don't know who's involved with that one.
The same person, I think Donna Graves Smith, also did the Coco 3 Basic Manual.
Okay.
And the reason I know this is because if you listen to the Coco 3 Roundtable from October 1986, Barry Thompson alludes to that fact, that very fact that she wrote both the Getting Started with Color Basic and the Coco 3 Getting Started with Extended Color Basic.
Oh, okay. Cool. Well, it certainly would explain the similar style.
No doubt.
Of course, it also mentions Linda Yackel. As the illustrator for possibly responsible for the famous, Coco Man Doodle or whatever the name of that person that
that's right.
Anthropomorphized Coco is. Anyway, so he's cool. Good to have it documented. It'd be nice to track those people down, although they're bound to be getting a little on the old side by now, but we'll see.
I was just going to say, it's a shame they're not credited more because, I mean, those are fantastic books.
Yeah. Like, especially they hit the audience just right.
When I got my first computer, which was the Coco 3, I mean, that was the first book I read. And it was very informative.
Oh, it was well written.
Yeah.
It presented the information really well without being patronizing to a child.
That's true, John. That's a good way to put it.
Right.
The next news item is... MIM size minus peak 39 times 256 plus peak 40 by Alan Huffman. This is a post that Alan Huffman made to the Coco list. It's an interesting revelation that he made that talks about how reporting the memory, available memory on different Cocos was actually, I think, wrong by one byte. The result was wrong by one byte. It seems that he was opining about how that worked on Coco 2s, and then on the Coco 3, he indicates that you get one more byte there as well. So anyway, an interesting segue into how memory, free memory anyway, is allocated, or not allocated, is determined on a Coco.
It's cool. It led to some discussion on the mailing list there with Art Flexer. Anyway, he was an ADOS person, so he ought to know something about how the stuff works. Yeah, just kind of cool to see the interaction and the kind of in-depth technical analysis you can get on a Coco topic on a mailing list that you don't normally see on some of the Web 2.0 or Web 3.0 or whatever we've got these days. The old mailing list sometimes gives you a little more technical depth.
The next news item is, remember Radio Shack? It's now a crypto company with wild tweets by Yuen Liu at the Washington Post. This is an article from the Washington Post about what everyone probably knows by now. Radio Shack has gone savage on Twitter.
Yeah. Just beyond crazy. I don't know if there's an actual means to an end there, a purpose to the madness or method or to the madness or whatever, if it's just somebody got the chance to be a troll and took it. Maybe I should figure out a way to troll bait them with the Coco Crew Twitter account. See what we can get. But it is a shame to see that a brand that I think most of us have at least one version of it in our mind that is some sort of pleasant memory from the past or somewhat noble brand or whatever that is kind of being trashed and trolling on Twitter. but not really surprised considering, you know, it's sort of a, its real value is as a zombie brand anyway. So at least they're keeping the name alive, I guess. So the next item is comes from Mikey Furman, or Michael Furman, kind of goes by Mikey. And it sort of suits him. That's probably why he goes by it. Just a real friendly guy. A little soft-spoken, but in a lovable sort of way. Anyway, so Mikey has been working with the, how do you pronounce this, Coco Ion? Is that, got one, but I'm not sure how you pronounce it. The Coco Ion.
Coco Ion.
He's got an N on the end for some reason, but okay. Anyway, the Ethernet card. I thought it was Coco IO myself, so. But he's been doing some work, and he has got a video here showing where he's got a utility that runs on Nitrous 9 that it does. He says, I wrote an NTP date utility for the Coco that uses the Coco IO Ethernet card, and he has a video demonstrating it. And so for those not familiar, well, NTP date, well, at least the name matches a Unix or Linux utility that is used to update the time on your Linux machine or NetBSD or other Unix-style machine using the Network Time Protocol. Pretty sure that's what NTP stands for, which is a way of updating your clock over the network, over the internet, based on, you know, one of these hyper-accurate atomic clocks that make themselves available for such purposes, often at universities nearby or other high-minded institutions around the world. If you have a Coco that needs to be set to the proper time, this could be a really good way to do it. Certainly could replace the need for a hardware real-time clock on your Nitrous machine. Mikey's a fairly skilled developer, makes a living out in Silicon Valley, taking a liking to the Coco IO networking card. And he's got another video also with the Coco IO Ethernet card. And he's got the utilities for doing some basic configuration and then running pings. Very cool, Mikey. Nice to see that. Good work. Thanks for sharing.
Both really good videos. Thanks.
Not a Coco video next, but maybe it could inspire somebody who wants to do some work. It's a video from Jordan West at YouTube. It says, isometric games often use hand-drawn 2D sprites to add depth to a game without having to deal with full 3D rendering. And, of course, this is when you have the graphics rendered kind of cockeyed at an angle. Zaxxon mode is probably what would be most familiar to people if you don't know the term isometric. It kind of tricks the mind a little bit, or imparting some 3D information into the graphics displays so you can move behind things and that sort of stuff. Anyway, in order to do that, you need to be able to map your coordinates on where you are on the actual game board or whatever to where to print it or paint it on the screen. And there's a little bit of math involved. If you don't know the math already, then you may want to check out this video and have it blow your mind a little bit with some matrix math, and maybe you can write the next great isometric game for the Coco. Got another YouTuber here, this one named, the account is Evil Trout. what that's supposed to mean, but, you know, Evil Trout, how classic Sierra game graphics worked and an attempt to upscale them. And so he's doing not deeply technical, but somewhat in-depth discussion of how graphics or graphics data is stored and made available in the old Sierra games like King Quest using the AGI system. Basically, they're rendered in essentially a vector format. Instead of being a bitmap, they'll have drawing commands, you know, put a square here and a circle there and color it and that sort of stuff, which is a pretty good technique for compressing the amount of data that you need to be able to draw a scene, as long as you don't mind a scene that looks a little, you know, cartoony maybe. Anyway, he kind of takes that notion and then experiments with moving it from the original 160 by 200, I think was the original resolution, and upscales it to something more modern, and then finds that the upscaling, the direct method of doing that, does not result in very good looking graphics. So he experiments some with using thicker lines and then finding ways to make the endpoints of the lines match up and that sort of thing. Ways to make the flood fills not overfill and that sort of thing. So anyway, I thought it was interesting. If you're into graphics at all, maybe you check it out and maybe you'll find, maybe you'll learn something. Maybe you'll be inspired. All right, moving on to a link from Martin Malley. Title of the link, CPM is really open source now. So, of course, this is not Cocoa at all, but it does touch a little bit on open source, and I know something about open source. I thought this was a good one to come in. CPM was a product of a company called Digital Research back in the 70s. Of course, the operating system for, well, Z80 for sure. Does CPM cover 8080 as well? I guess it does. Yeah, Z80, 8080, and 8085. But at some point in, I guess, in the 90s, Digital Research was acquired and passed around. At some point, it was declared fairly publicly that the CPM source was available for anyone to download and kind of do whatever they wanted with, but I guess it wasn't spelled out in a way that really amounted to an actual grant of license. And that's one thing that confuses people sometimes is just because you make something available for download doesn't mean that it's safe for somebody else to download it and then use it. So apparently this Brian Sparks, who's the president of DRDOS, which I guess is the legal inheritor of the rights to CPM. But this paragraph represents a right to use, distribute, modify, enhance, and otherwise make available in a non-exclusive manner CPM and its derivatives. This right comes from the company DRDOS Inc.'s purchase of Digital Research, the company and all assets dating back to the mid-90s. DRDOS Inc. and I, Brian Sparks, president of DRDOS Inc. as its representative, is the owner of CBM and the successor in interest of Digital Research assets. So hopefully that makes it clear for anyone hoping to use DRDOS and anything that might put them in any sort of legal risk. You know, not exactly a Cocoa thing, but still it's a nice illustration that just because you take some source and put in a zip file and make it available for download, then you wonder why no one downloads it and does anything with it. Sometimes you haven't been clear enough about what the license really is. So let that be a lesson to you.
The next news item is, okay, completed the PCB layout for the Cocoa 2 keyboard by Mr. Mike Rojas. This is a Facebook post that Mike has put up on Facebook that has some pictures of a replacement for the Cocoa 2 Mylar for the keyboard. This is actually an interesting project, and looks like he's really made some progress on it. I know he's got a Cocoa 3 version of this, and I think a Cocoa 1, so now it looks like he's tackling the Cocoa 2 keyboard.
Yep, very cool. Always is a popular subject when people talk about the keyboard replacements for the Cocoa in whatever their form. So, nice to see the projects come to fruition.
The next news item is TRS-80 MC10 plus Raspberry Pi Pico plus MT8808 wire USB keyboard adapter by Mr. Brendan Donahue. This is a YouTube video that Brendan has posted. It's about 5 minutes long, and he is using a USB keyboard to talk to an MC10, to connect to an MC10. Is that right, John?
That's what I understand it. Yeah, he's driving some hardware, a switch matrix, so it should be a good emulation. I won't say the MC10 is great. The MC10 definitely is a quirky machine. I enjoy it. Some people enjoy it, some people not as much. It does have its quirks. One of its quirks is its keyboard. Depending on how you're using it, you may not need to do a lot of touch typing, but if you do find a need to or a desire to use the MC10 and do a lot of typing on it, it's probably a good thing to have a way to use a more modern keyboard.
Two things impressed me about this video. I see that he's using a Weller 921ZX, which is, I believe this is a pretty older soldering station. Very impressive. And the other thing is that he only has 9 subscribers to his YouTube channel, so we need to get those subscribers up.
Active Software is proud to present Games Tape 1. Find out what critics are calling the best collection of Dragon games available. 8 fantastic full-length programs on one cassette. That's an incredible 200K. Each game features spectacular color graphics and sound. You get Wipeout, Interplanetary Trader, Wumpus Mansion, Hilo, Atom Hunt, Snail Pace, Execution, and Air Assault. All of these great games for just £6.25, and that includes postage. Plus, our unconditional replacement guarantee. If your cassette fails to load, just return it to Active Software for an immediate replacement. All orders are dispatched within 48 hours of receipt. Order your copy of Games Take 1 today. Active Software, 117 Eichnield Street, Birmingham. Active Software, second to none.
Expand your horizons. Take your Coco beyond the limits of floppy diskettes. Connect to Delphi, your complete online business and personal resource. Enjoy special forums for owners of the Tandy Color Computer, including OS9 Online and Rainbow Online. Meet other color computer owners, order hardware and software, inquire about products, and download programs. And Delphi is affordable. No extra charges for TimeNet or Telenet. No monthly minimum. No premium for 1200 or 2400 BPS. And connection rates are as low as $7.20 per hour. Find out what your Coco was really meant for. Delphi, the world's premier online information service.
The next news item is, this is a voice synthesizer project I built over 30 years ago by Matt McCullough. This is on a Facebook group called All Things Tandy Radio Shack. So you may have to join the group before you see the post, but it looks like Matt posted some pictures of a speech synthesizer built around an SPO256 chip that I think Radio Shack actually sold. He says he built this over 30 years ago, and that this was a chip that used phonemes to generate human speech. Very impressive. Lots of comments on this particular post. Lots of interest.
Yeah, I've got both of the primary chips involved there. They used to sell them on the peg wall at Radio Shack in blister packs, with enough documentation that you could put together something like this, and that's probably how it would look with all the wires on the back. So pretty cool. Nice to see that he had done this project, made it available, something for us to be entertained. Very cool.
The next news item is a combination of two. It's breaking news! Exclamation, 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 exclamation. Very exciting post here. I just managed to make my first machine code program on the MC-10 by Johan Coleman. And he also says, release of Shogun. Simon Jonasson and Jim Gary tested it already, but now you can all play. Apparently, Johan has made a couple of assembly language-based games for the MC-10, which is quite nice. I think that's a good thing. It's good to see more interest in this particular little system, especially in terms of machine code. It's good to see people excited about it. So congrats, Johan, for making something for the MC-10 and doing it in 6803 assembly.
Yep, very cool.
My first news article here is from Robert Galt. He posted on the Coco list, Special Coding in War. War is a game. It's a basic game written by the author James Garon. And I guess he's discovered that some lines of code, it says lines 60,000 and up, which they can't be listed with a Coco 3, but they can on a Coco 2. That's pretty interesting right there.
Yeah, so it's another, like I said, I included this, another technical discussion on the old multimedia list. So if you're not on the list, you're missing these discussions.
Yeah, it's
an interesting topic. They used to do all kinds of weird stuff like that where they, you know, I don't know if it was for purposes of obfuscation or if it somehow was saving memory or what other purpose they might have had in mind. But, you know, you get these programs in BASIC put into the machine in ways that, you know, maybe you couldn't list them or maybe you couldn't save them or whatever else. All kinds of weird tricks they could play on the interpreter. And for, like I said, for whatever purpose.
All right, next news article is a two-for-one special from Rocky Hill, Rocky Hill YouTube channel. The first one is testing a pepper board, which is a salt replacement solution on a Coco 3. So that's for the salt chip that can go bad, and it's, you can't find that IC. So this is a solution to replace that. And there's also another one here. He's got another YouTube video. Easy HDMI out for the Color Computer 1 and 2 with his adapter board. Now, that adapter board sits between the 6847 here, it looks like, and the motherboard, of course. You also need with this adapter the RGB to HDMI is required, so that's the Raspberry Pi solution.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's cool to see the demonstration there, and it's nice to have you know, an extra hardware hacker out there doing some cool projects in the community.
For sure.
And, like I said, these are definitely the kind of they get my stamp of approval when you're replacing unobtainium chips that do fail, and you know, improving the video output. You know, it's keeping us in the current generation of monitors. That's a big plus.
Next one up is from Feud. It's a YouTube channel as well. I've never heard of Feud YouTube channel. First time for me. It looks like here's a game, Lander Venture World Test. So it's a TRC Color Computer Lander game. Looks like it's in progress here. Flying around the world at 500% real speed. Normal round takes about 5 minutes.
Yeah, I think he's posted some other videos of this work. I didn't include them all, but there's some sort of game in progress that, to me, it looks reminiscent of maybe Scramble or something like that. Not sure where he's going with it, but hopefully we can at least encourage him to keep going until we get a release. So.
All right, next one up here is, I actually touched on this one last month in my game review. It's from Paul Shoemaker. Here is Ghost Rush version 2.0 exclusively for the Color Computer 3. That's his Ghost Rush game that he created. The first version was for the Cocoa 1 and 2, so this uses the nice 16 color. You could switch between RGB and composite. If you have a Cocoa 3 and you want to play it in its full glory, this is the version for you. And there's also a version 2.1. He's added a second set of spikes, teeth. Yeah, it's a great game.
It's a cool game. This next one is from Jenny List at Hackaday. TensorFlow Lite on a Commodore 64. TensorFlow is an AI library used to develop artificial intelligence software, and usually requires some beefier processors than the 8-bit world has, but there is a Lite version. It appears that someone has ported it for the Commodore 64. I don't know if anyone has actually developed anything with it yet, but I guess getting libraries ported is the first big step to that, and of course lends to the question. You would think that the 6809 would have some advantages for running something.
Even better,
like, yeah.
Yeah.
It'd be maybe good for the Turbo 9.
Certainly. Yeah, it's right. Certainly a very impressive feat to be doing tensors on an 8-bit processor like that. Although I would have to say that training probably would take a long time.
Yeah, I can't imagine it'd be very quick. Well, that's pretty cool. All right, here's a kind of an interesting one. This is from Atari Spot at Twitter. Ask a collector lucky enough to have found official licensed Atari 2600 cartridges from Turkey whether they work. They'll say no, or they'll lie. So this is kind of an interesting read about how they tried to put region protection on Atari cartridges, specifically in Turkey, so that you could only play them in Turkey. And it looks like there's some hardware involved, and that they would warn people that if you tried to go around their protection, that you could physically damage your Atari 2600.
Pretty ghetto, but probably effective. And it sounded like they were literally remapping some of the pins on the cartridge, on the cartridge, so that it just wouldn't work on an American, for example, 2600. But plug it into the Turkish one, I guess it would. So I don't know, kind of neat, kind of interesting that they would do that. Like I said, a little bit ghetto, but effective, I suppose.
All right, we got another cool one. This one's from Alex Porto. Oscilloscope drawing for everyone. This is interesting doing, I guess you could call it line art. You have to like have like a continuous line for this, but basically it allows you to draw in a vector graphic kind of way on an oscilloscope screen from your computer.
Yeah, I mean, it's just an example. I mean, just to inspire people, I guess. I think he's using a PC, of course, with probably something plugged in via USB or whatever. But I'll say from experience, if you want to do something like this on a Coco, then the Orchestra 90 cartridge is perfect for doing exactly this. So two channels, X and Y, you plug them into the XY mode on your oscilloscope, and drawing on the screen is a simple matter of programming.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. All right, the next four links here are from friend of the show, Jim Gary. These are all MC10 specific, these videos. First one is called Sheep Station by Philip Coates from 1985. That's been ported over to the MC10. And this is kind of a text-based game where you are running a large sheep station and have to purchase land and sheep and food. And so kind of an interesting game from 1985. So that one's cool. Check it out. I'm kind of partial to this next one. It's called Star Command Sigma. Yeah, it's given that name, but clearly it's a Star Trek game. Doesn't hide anything. You're fighting Klingons and you're on the Enterprise. So, this is a port. It's interesting. I enjoyed the video. I'm a fan of Star Trek, the original Star Trek games. Anyway, this one's got some nice. I like it because it's, you don't have a lot of screen space text wise on MC10 or a color computer, but this does a very good job of giving you compact displays of everything. Even has some good sound and animation of like when you're firing torpedoes, you actually see the torpedoes, go across toward the enemy in the grid. So kind of fun. Plus it has a timed element to it, of course. So you have X number of Klingons to kill and you have a limited amount of time or moves, if you will, to take them out. So looks like it's pretty challenging. Yeah, nice Star Trek game, a nice port of it. So that's cool. And then the next two actually are Draw Poker by Jim Minnick from 1984. This is a text-based draw poker game for the MC10. Looks pretty cool. The second link is an update, which also has a link to a blog that Jim has describing some of the bugs that he's run into with the draw poker and dealing with those. So. Always several programs each month that Jim Gary puts out. So well done. Thanks, Jim.
Yeah. Very cool. Here's one. I don't know if you've ever asked yourself this. Many people have occasionally come up with this question. If you've ever seen a graph like is shown in the article there on how the various computer languages, programming languages are related or descended from one another, and it doesn't take very long for those graphs to become crazy unwieldy. So the question is, why are there so many programming languages? This article is by Doug Meil, M-E-I-L, and it's in the Communications of the ACM. So he goes through a discussion of some of various old computer languages and how some are related to one another and that sort of thing. He discusses some of the reasons why there are different ones and how different ones solve different problems or whatever. Programming languages are often designed for certain tasks or workloads in mind. In that sense, most languages differ less in what they make possible and more in terms of what they make easy. So I think a lot of people, particularly people that are maybe not really programmers or not very accomplished or kind of new to programming, may not really see the distinction, or they may wonder, well, we've got BASIC, why do we need Pascal and Logo and C and BASIC 09? Isn't that just another BASIC? And you got Forth and ETL I was talking about, and all these various languages. Why do we need all those? And like you said, it's not necessarily that you have to have a different language to do a certain task, but quite often the different languages make different kinds of tasks easy or easier than other languages, either because of they may be built around different data structures or built for different environments in general. if that answer is good enough for you, then well, you don't need to read the article. But it might be worth reading the article just to expand your mind a little bit around why are there so many, you know, what are the various factors that have influenced people to write so many different languages, some of which, are, you know, were only ever used by the person that designed the language in the first place. So check it out. See what you think and wrap your mind around it. Be good for you. So this article is from Neil Parker. Of course, it's not a Coco thing. Multiplying and dividing on the 6502. But so what's the point here? Well, so most of the techniques in, that are described here for the 6502, withstanding the exact instructions, or in some cases maybe even with these same instructions, you can probably do the same techniques on the 6809 to multiply or divide if you needed to. And if you need, if you want to divide, maybe it's a maybe you do want to do it this way. If nothing else, well, once you've looked at the amount of code necessary to multiply, you might be happy to know that there's a multiply instruction available, whether you're using the 6809 on the COCO or the 6803 on the MC10. So go Motorola. Good stuff. And like I said, if you need to write a division routine and don't know how, well, this will give you some instruction in a processor that is at least roughly similar. So check it out. Let me know how you do with your assembly language learning there.
It's Operation, Milton Bradley's goofy game for dopey doctors. Now for the Tandy Color Computer 3. The operating table plugs into your color computer's cartridge slot. The computer assigns each player which procedure they are to perform.
Remove funny bone.
Careful. If you touch the sides...
Oh!
You blew it, Charlie. Funds are automatically removed from your account and you earn malpractice demerits. Your colleagues are suddenly busy at lunch. Next...
Take out wrenched ankle.
A winner. Funds are transferred to your account and you earn malpractice insurance points. Enjoy the ride home in your BMW 4 Series convertible.
I hate you.
Operation, a game for your color computer from Milton Bradley.
Operation is for entertainment purposes only. Operation should not be considered as any form of medical advice or medical training. Milton Bradley does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, physicians, products, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned in his products. Reliance on any information provided by Operation is solely at your own risk. 128K Tandy Color Computer 3 with composite or RGB monitor required. Drink responsibly.
You know what's going on again at Radio Shack? That's right, honey. It's Tandy's Sweet System Sale. You get a Tandy Color Computer 3 with a dual FD501 disk drive system and your choice of either a DMP105 printer or a DCM212 modem for just $599. Most folks' $599 deal is not a system, honey.
These Apple disk drives are just $599.
That's not a system. Radio Shack is the place for a full system. Tandy Sweet System Sale. Come and get it while it lasts, because it will not last long.
Love that cocoa from Tandy.
Okay, so here's a video. I think we hinted at this one last month, but I've seen it mentioned a few times. The blurb that you can see when you go to the video is why I'm retiring my Amiga. The topic actually says, should we stop using retro computers to save them? Does using the computers that we love so much risk damaging them to the point where they could be gone forever? I mean, could you, you know, your salt chip could die, or your gimme chip could die, or, some of us might be there when the last 6809 dies. Who knows? Wouldn't that be a sad day? I don't know. I guess it's just a topic of discussion. And, I mean, we could even have this for a host discussion, I guess. But to me, it kind of is a, if you have to stop using them to save them, I mean, will you stop driving your Corvette so that the Corvette still exists? And if they still exist, but you can't drive it, does it matter? So that's kind of where I'm at on this. But anyway, we'll see. Go ahead and watch the video. Food for thought. See what you think about the topic. And if you decide to give up on using all your cocoa stuff, well, give me a call with a quote. So, all right, let's see. So moving on. My last news item here in this little group is from Grant Leedy. In CocoFest 2022 survey, we want to hear from you. If you went to the CocoFest and you haven't already filled out the survey, it's been out a little while now since, about a month it's been out. But go and use a Google form, open it up, answer the questions, give Grant some feedback, and let him know what you thought about CocoFest. Hopefully he can tailor it to make it continue to be a good event for all of us. So there you go.
All right, next news article is from Mr. SQL at Atari Age, titled Middle of Nowhere C64 Color Computer Emulator. This is a very ambitious project. From what I gather, this it's not so much an emulator, but I guess it'll spit out, it'll take a basic program from the Coco and then convert it to the basic on a Commodore 64. Is this correct, John?
Well, it's a little unclear to me. You know, he's pointed out another project that he says is similar to, which sounds completely different to me.
Yeah.
Oh, where he's got some sort of Atari 2600 emulator for the Commodore 64 that'll load up Atari 2600 binary, which at least the machine code theoretically could run on the Commodore 64. You're going to have to do something to that to make that work at all, just on the graphics, because it's so different. Mm-hmm. But in this case, it sounds like he's relying on the similarities of the basics to be able to load color computer basic programs,
right,
and then have it run on the Commodore 64. I guess he's using some kind of translator or planning to use some kind of translator to take care of sound and graphics. And it sounds like a big project to me, but we'll see what comes out of it. And I'm not sure what the market is, how many Commodore 64 people are dying to play Coco Adventure games from the Rainbow Book of Adventure. I don't know, but it'd be cool to see the project. So.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely. Yeah, it seems to target the adventure games here. It says it's going to convert basic semi-graphic games to be converted to PETSCII.
Yeah.
So that's... Yeah, well, we'll have to see where this goes. Keep an eye on this one. It's pretty cool.
I like what he says in the post. This project was inspired by Lonnie Falk and Prospect, Kentucky.
Yeah.
Middle of nowhere.
The next news article is from Astrozist.
Yeah, I guess.
It's a cool title here. Old websites were cooler, actually. It's a neat video showing the web from 1999, 2000, back in the day. I must say I do agree. I actually like the older websites better. I'm not a fan of bubble graphics and drop-down menus that have been hidden. And I look at an old website. To me, I can navigate it a lot easier. Maybe that's because that's the first thing we used. I'm not sure, but I just do like the simplicity of the older web. Plus, you can run on an older computer. There's a lot better chance to run on an older machine versus the new code now. Pretty much impossible. So that's a cool video.
Yeah, well, like I say, as an engineer, just the scale of how much stuff just is downloaded to your machine on the average website today then executed on your local browser, it's amazing that it works at all.
Yeah.
And then to see people, not to pick on the web, on the mailing list, but to see somebody complain about a 64K attachment on the mailing list is just mind-boggling to me that they care about that when... the average, one graphic on a website is 10 times that size sometimes.
Yeah, that's so true. The next news article is from M. David Johnson. Ralph Serpas recently discovered a typo in BDS Software's Genesis 1-11 quiz game. Speaking of older websites, I know this is a newer website, but... if you check out BDS Software website, it definitely it looks retro. That's kind of neat right there.
Yeah. That's like I said, this is the kind of website that one person probably can just edit it in a regular text editor.
Yeah.
But it does the job, It's
for sure.
I don't know how hard it is to maintain or whatever, but it's pretty easy to automate something like that too. So very cool. And if you're playing this Genesis game, apparently there's an update, so check it out.
The next news article is from Glenn Hewlett. Some Canadian content here for you. I didn't even know about this until recently, actually. I didn't even know he was working on this. So he's porting over the arcade game Robotron to the Color Computer 3. So this is really awesome project. I hope it comes to fruition. Looks like it will. You know, I found out about this. I actually got an email from someone wanting a dual joystick, a Gamester, for this game. And I'm thinking to myself, well, you know, do we even have Robotron? But then I realized, yeah, so Glenn is working on this. That's cool to see.
I would think if you're going to play Robotron in any meaningful way, you're going to need, like you say, a double stick Gamester or something like that. Because I just can't imagine holding two deluxe joysticks on the table and trying
to clap them down.
Play that way, but
yeah, for something like Robotron, yeah, it would wear them out quickly.
that's right. Great work, Glenn. Looking forward to this.
All right, our next one is from Paul Shoemaker. For anyone who may wish to increase the length of their existing drive wire cable, I can confirm that this extender cable works like a dream. So this is a commercially available cable. It's an extension cable, so it has a receptacle on one end and a plug on the other. So you can just put it in line with and extend out your serial cable on your Coco. So
apparently there's something else in the world that actually uses a 4-pin DIN.
I think it's actually for audio power supply.
Oh, there you go.
So thanks for that, Paul, and for that tip. Our next one is from Oliver Schmidt. A2 Stream simultaneously receives an A2 Stream file from any HTTP server and plays it through the stock Apple II speaker circuit using pulse width modulation at 22050 hertz sample rate with 5.17 bit resolution.
Wow.
So
I'm not sure how they calculate the 5.17 bits. But
right. Yeah. I'm not sure about those 0.17 bits.
Kind of cool. I mean, you know, we of course have the Coco playable version of the podcast available, you have to download it and play it, though, whatever. But, you know, the Coco I/O hardware, it should be reasonably similar to this Ethernet 2 Ethernet hardware. So if you can somehow get past all the 6502 and Apple II-isms in this code, theoretically you could port this same functionality to the Coco and be able to download the podcast and listen right over the Coco I/O Ethernet card. So, Mikey, are you out there? Be a cool project.
Our next one's from Brian Cockfield at Hackaday, building a serial bus to save an old hard drive. Here's the problem. Problem is it's an old 486 like compact computer. So it's called a lunchbox computer. Yeah, which doesn't have, you know, it's older, doesn't have USB on it. So I'm guessing when they say serial bus, they mean like an RS-232 port. Essentially what they're trying to do is get each sector off of all the hard drive on this old 486 computer and get it over to a modern computer, well, modern-ish, Windows XP in this case. And it doesn't sound like there's any hardware involved in this, so I'm guessing it's some kind of software that was written to do this. I don't know. Did you get any more clarity from reading that, John?
No. Like you said, I think it's just that he's had to go to some effort to, I don't know, nowadays, you know, old RS-232 is like ancient, you know, mysterious technology to a lot of the modern day hackers, you know. So, I think basically he just used a serial port to transfer hard drive data sector by sector. Isn't that cool? So, I don't know. It's the kind of thing I could see many of our listeners possibly doing, even though it's not Coco. You could see that they might want to do something like that sometime. So.
Sure. Yeah. I think what threw me off is they talk so much about USB in the article when it's not involved in the process at all, unless they use a serial adapter.
Took the guy 2 days to get past it. Why wouldn't you just use USB?
Right. I can't find the USB port on this. Yeah. Our next one is from Paulo Garcia. Beauty and the Beast TRS 8-bit newsletter announces its 2022 programming contest for the TRS 80 family of computers. Well, this is kind of funny because this is the contest is basically to create Wordle on the TRS 80, and I think specifically here they mean the Z80 TRS 80s, maybe, and some of the others, of course. Well, most of the others are all Z80 based, and of course the Coco is lousy with the Wordle Wordle programs out there. So,
well, hopefully, we can help them out and find the 6809 version of Wordle.
That's right.
Somehow.
Which of the seven do you want today? Right.
All right. Well, like you say, it's good to support the Trash Talk folks, and you know, maybe we can have a little Wordle party at Tandy Assembly. Well, I guess that'll cover it for our news items this month. So why don't we take a short little break, and then we'll be back with some quick feedback.
Where's Jill?
She's really lonely. She's been spending hours on her Tandy 1000 again.
Do you think Dave will ever find his true love?
Not if he's been playing Quasar Commander on his Coco all day.
We used to be lonely.
Until we met on TandysOnly.com.
TandysOnly.com is the new online dating site for folks who won't give up their Tandy computers.
You don't have to be lonely at TandysOnly.com.
If you're a fan of the TRS-80 color computer, then you won't want to miss Coco, the colorful history of Tandy's underdog computer from CRC Press. Follow the evolution of the color computer from the early beginnings of Project Green Thumb and Videotex terminals to the Coco 1, MC10, Coco 2, and Coco 3. Follow the rise of Rainbow Magazine, Microware, and the Coco community at large. Get the inside story from Tandy engineers, constantly challenged to reduce cost and increase capability. If you own a Coco, you should own this book. Coco, the colorful history of Tandy's underdog computer, written by Boise Pete and Bill LaJudas. Available now at Amazon.com.
Now it's time for some feedback. Feedback's a little short this month. Certainly would like to hear some feedback from you. Just a reminder, feedback at CocoCrew.org. Please do reach out, or you can reach out on the Facebook group or the Coco mailing list at Malted Media, or pretty much any other way you can think to reach out to us. And if you ever see us there, then feel free to reach out that way and send us some love. Main item this month comes from Paulo Garcia. Paulo says, another great episode. Thank you all for the hard work to put the show together every month. So thank you, Paulo, for acknowledging the work, and certainly something we enjoy doing. And it's good to hear from anyone listening, and good to know that there is some people listening. All right. The next one's a little bit of a joke. I'm dragging Steve Chapman in. He replied to something I posted on the Facebook group. His reply was, why is this even in question? Which was a response to what I posted. Was the a circle or picture of a page from a book. It says assembly language is a symbolic form of machine language, because it harkens back to an old discussion. anyway, that I thought his response was funny. Why is this even in question? So I've drug him in as our second feedback provider this month. So hopefully you'll forgive me for that. Anyway, if you'd like to see other people send feedback, maybe see us respond to whatever feedback you'd like to provide, please do reach out. That's, again, feedback, FEEDBACK, at CocoCrew.org, CocoCrDW.org, and we'd love to hear from you. All right. Well, thanks for listening to the feedback. Now we'll take another little break, and we'll be back probably with a little discussion amongst the hosts.
What a gorgeous night.
Harvey, I called the exterminator for you.
Exterminator?
Yeah, I heard you telling your friends that your TRS-80 has mice.
Mice? No. I was talking about the mice, the M1SE from Bartlett Labs.
So there's no mice?
No, it's the Model 1 system expander. It adds all kinds of great new capabilities to your TRS-80.
That's a relief.
It lets you connect an SVGA monitor, Ethernet, a joystick. All my programs can fit on a compact flash drive.
I'll call and cancel the exterminator.
Hold on a second, Madge. Don't cancel. I think we might have owls.
The Model 1 System Expander from Bartlett Labs. Get more information at bartlettlabs.com.
This month in Coco History.
Welcome to This Month in Coco History, where we explore events in the life of our favorite home computer. I'm Boise Pete, and this month we go back 36 years to review a rather unique ad campaign for a trio of software programs. Pages 47, 49, and 51 of the July 1986 issue of the Rainbow Magazine feature three full-page ads for DynaCalc, OS9 Profile, and TSEdit, respectively. Radio Shack's advertising campaign takes a solidly different style and flavor, showing a soup can at the top of the ad, and the words Color Computer, followed by OS9 in the label middle, and then the product name. Each ad contains the title Canned Software for My Coco in bold font, and below that three columns of tongue-in-cheek text describing the features and benefits of the software in a way that emphasized the soupy nature of the ad. A clip-out coupon resides at the bottom right-hand corner for an RSC16 computer catalog. This ad campaign stands out in a number of respects. First, it's a departure from Radio Shack's other color computer advertisements of the time, which focused mostly on hardware. Secondly, the creativity of the ad is notable given that Radio Shack took the symbol of a very well-known soup company and emblazoned their logo on the can. Thirdly, this ad campaign focused on OS9 software, and by extension, the operating system itself, indicating just how serious Radio Shack was about promoting it. I believe this ad campaign stands out as one of Radio Shack's most creative and OS9-centric ones ever. It also appears in the July 1986 issue of 80 Micro Magazine, the same month that the Tandy Color Computer 3 was announced.
And that's this month in Coco History.
All right, welcome back, Coco Cruisers. Now it's time for our discussion amongst the hosts. Today, after much lengthy, careful deliberation and consideration, but no forethought, no preparation, we've decided that the topic today will be, who is this show for? Just to clarify, who do we think are our listeners? Ideally, the show is for everyone, or at least everyone with at least a passing interest in the Tandy color computer, or maybe Tandy computers of all sorts. But, obviously that's probably not going to fulfill everyone, or it's not always going to be exciting for everyone that's ever touched a Tandy computer. Quite a lot of people probably do plenty of Coco work and, may not always be turned on by our show. I don't know. I don't want to simply dismiss them as, well, the show's not for them. That always sounds like a snotty thing to say. Who are we looking for? Well, we made up kind of a point when we had the seminar we did at the Coco Fest. I sort of made a point of that this show takes itself kind of seriously, made as a point basically to say that we're not here to just sort of yuck it up and make silly faces or anything like that, that we actually do take our hobby perhaps too seriously, but that we do view this stuff as something worth doing, that sort of intellectually fulfilling for us or whatever. So I guess that implies that the show is for other people who are looking for a certain amount of intellectual satisfaction from the discussions that we have here. I know the Turbo 9 guys, I think, expressed a view that that we provided some kind of meatier technical content than they found in some other places, which I took to be as quite a compliment. Hopefully that's not putting anyone else down, just a statement of the way we do things. We're not necessarily here just to laugh it up and poke fun at each other, or make fun of Boise's beer belly, or whatever. No, Boise does not have a beer belly. Not really.
Thankfully not. Thank you.
Sorry, I just had to poke a little fun there. I guess that's what it comes down to. We think our listeners are like us. And we hope that they are, and we hope to entertain them. We want to entertain each other, and we want to entertain listeners that are like us, and we hope that that involves as broad a section of the community as possible. We realize that sometimes maybe that's not everyone in the community, but I think that's okay too. So that's why we invite feedback. If we're somehow missing the mark with you, we'd like to hear about it. What do you guys think? Neil, what do you think? Who are we making this show for?
Well, definitely any retro computer enthusiast. It doesn't have to just be Coco.
Well, we definitely cover other topics of broader interest.
That's right.
Not strictly Coco all the time. That said, Coco is the focus.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. But, you know, I have some friends that listen to our podcast here, and they're not even really into retro computing at all, let alone Coco. And they enjoy it.
Cool.
Yeah.
Mike, what do you think?
Yeah, I think you said that it was for people like us. I would agree that. I think we do a pretty good job of, if I'm going to pat ourselves on the back here, that we address a large audience, because the show can be very technical, sometime over, you know, maybe some listeners' heads or even their level of interest. But we also have other parts that will appeal to them. And, you know, we cover game news, and that has a lot of appeal and interest to people, I'm sure. So I guess there's a little of something for everybody in the show. You're right. The show is for everybody. We try to be informational and entertaining as well. So and do it in a nice monthly bite-sized manner.
Yeah, definitely the pacing of the episodes, I think, is probably been a topic of discussion about the show in a larger sense. Some people earlier on definitely wanted us to go faster. I don't know how we would ever done it. I don't think slowing down would be a lot better, but I think I actually liked the monthly pace, but we've maintained that for, 7 years now. I think it's working out for us. Boise, what have you got to say?
Well, I've often said that I see Coco Crew Podcast as a liquid version of the Rainbow Magazine. Monthly podcast comes out every month. People who listen to us are probably like us, as you said, but I like to think of them as people who would have subscribed to the Rainbow back in the day. John, you're the Lonnie Falk. Anybody can subscribe, obviously, and I'm sure that our subscribers run the gamut in terms of backgrounds, interests, and so forth. Probably, of course, are all interested, mostly of them. Most of them are interested in retro computing, but I like to think of us as a replacement for that energy that the Rainbow gave us back in the 80s, when I personally would literally run to the mailbox every month to see if my issue was in.
Yeah, well, it's definitely an aspiration is to fulfill some of that role. And like you said, the Rainbow definitely had kind of all levels of technical stuff, some fairly technical, some pretty deep. Some not as deep, but still kind of deeper than some people would want to go. They're talking about, you know, advanced basic techniques or something like that. We have that occasionally when we're qualified to cover it. we do some discussion of manipulating hardware or some amount of assembly language or whatever. We also have game reviews quite often. We'll cover at least some new hardware when it comes out. So we try to, like you say, we try to fill the role of the community newsletter or whatever. Try to be an independent voice, not beholden to any specific club or organization or whatever. Occasionally that gets us in a little trouble. like I said, everyone's welcome to provide feedback and suggestions and criticisms and love letters and, you know, whatever you got. Is that enough navel gazing for the day, for tonight?
Yes.
Deep.
Yeah, all right. Well, why don't we call this to a close? And like I said, if you're listening to this show, well, we'd like to think we're making it for you. So if you think we're making this show for you, then feel free to send us some feedback and let us know how we're doing. All right. Now, of course, is feedback, FEEDBACK, at cococrew.org. All right. Well, why don't we take another little break, and we'll be back with the rest of the show.
At Radio Shack, a full line of quality modems makes getting online easy. Open the door to an electronic village where the latest news, stock prices, and more are at your fingertips. Save time with our AC4 acoustic coupler. It's perfect for travelers and works with any telephone handset, just $119.95. And the direct connection modem 2 is also sale price this month for just $119.95. Our basic 300 baud modem is under $60. The DCM3 modem offers full duplex data transfer and is affordable for any home computer at just $59.95. Finally, the DC2212 operates at a blazing 1200 baud. Save on long-distance charges by transferring data up to 4 times faster. Choose an affordable Radio Shack modem that fits your needs and never be out of touch again. And they're only available in one place. Radio Shack, the technology store.
Welcome back to Neil's Corner on episode 86 of the Coco Crew podcast. Well, it's July, smack dab in the heat of the summer. I figured to honor that, let's kick it old school this month and take it back to the Wild West days. The game I'm talking about is a graphic adventure game called The Wild West. It is from Novasoft, distributed by Tom Mix back in 1987. I truly believe this is a rare, or at least underdog game for your Coco 3. There is absolutely no mention of it anywhere on the web, at least that I can find. One of the main reasons I think for this is due to the game being so heavily copy protected. I only stumbled across it back in the day because the Color Computer Users group I belonged to owned it in their library. I was fortunate enough to sign it out for the month to get to enjoy it. This was also my first encounter with copy protection. As most of you know, the Coco 3 was my first computer, so this game was probably one of the first few handful of games I played on it. The Wild West is a graphic adventure game taking place on a main street, where you have stuff like a general store, hotel, and of course a saloon. It doesn't have a very long gameplay, but what does take a lot of time is that it's not forgiving at all. You have basically only one chance per move before something happens to you. Game saves are a definite must. I spent hours back then trying to solve it. If you keep working at it, you will eventually figure out all the correct steps. What impressed me with this game, and still does to this day, is how ahead of the times it was. It requires a Tandy Color Computer 3 with 128K of memory, with composite or RGB monitor. However, the impressive part is it'll take advantage of a 512K memory upgrade to reduce disk loading between the scenes. It'll also use dual disk drives, so you don't have to keep swapping disk 1 and 2 if you're fortunate enough to have a dual drive system. Last but not least, it'll also use a speech sound pack if you have one with an MPI hooked up. The graphics I thought were very well done, and the multi-voice music is also very nice. If you want to try this game out, it is offered on the Coco Archives website. There are a few different versions of it in the zip file. One of them you have to patch to get the copy protection working when creating a real or virtual disk. There is also a DMK version available in that zip file that you can convert to an SDF file to use on a Coco SDC. Well, there you have it. Another game for you to try in your Coco 3, and a rare, obscure retro one at that. Possibly one you haven't heard of until now. Until next month, happy Coco gaming and retro forever.
The Warrior King. Become Rastan, Warrior King on the quest to regain his rightful crown, hidden deep within a sinister land. Battle monsters, gain magic and weapons, and travel through harsh wilderness and dark castle dungeons in this medieval realm. From the creator of Kung Fu Dude comes the awesome arcade game for the Coco 3. Warrior King uses the most detailed 320 by 216 color graphics and high-speed machine code to vault you into a world of fantasy.
Dare ye challenge the many battles ahead in order to become Warrior King?
Warrior King requires a 128K Coco 3 disk drive and joystick. Only $29.95 from Sundog Systems.
Well, it's that time again. We have reached the end of episode 86 on the Coco Crew podcast. As usual, I'd like to thank our host, John Linville, for procuring all the news articles and bringing us informative tech segments. Mike Rowan, for painstakingly editing the podcast and creating those awesome commercials. Boise Pete, our Coco historian. He remembers it, so you don't have to. Last but not least, all of you who listen and support us each month, we also really do appreciate your feedback. Until next month, happy cocoing and retro forever.
It's a blast from the past.
Please listen carefully.
Coco!
Like there's no tomorrow.
What is this crazy rock and roll music anyway?
It's a blast from the past.
Dance, dance, dance. Dance, dance, dance.
Let's go.